Well, nice to be here. I understand it's 30 degrees in Boston where I come from, so I wish I could stay longer. My name is Gail Gall, and I work in two areas. I'm a longtime school-based health center provider and leader, and I have also now teach adolescent health to nurse practitioner students, as well as an evaluator for a program to enhance mental health and substance abuse services in school-based health centers. We're going to go forward here.
The left one.
Good. So I haven't sold my services to anybody. So I wanted to tell you about something unique happening in Massachusetts. We have a lawsuit called Rosie D. versus Romney that was settled in 2007. We like to continue to call it Rosie D. versus Romney, although it's technically Rosie D. versus Patrick. And what it was a class action suit that was filed on behalf of children with serious emotional disturbances that alleged that the state did not provide adequate EPSDT screening and home-based services. And it was settled in favor of the plaintiffs, and as a result, the Massachusetts has to completely revamp its children's mental health services. And the key ingredients to this are to initiate screening for every child, and then to have the screening take place in primary care offices. And it's for all Medicaid-enrolled children under the age of 21 and has to occur annually. And that's to be followed up by a rigorous assessment that is only to be done on approved tools, and then by intensive family and community wraparound services. So this is a very, very distinct overhaul of the children's mental health services in Massachusetts. And the key thing about the screening is we are in the process of adapting to that right now, and it is very prescriptive about which screening tools can be used as qualifying for this. So the other side of it that I'm familiar with is the school-based health centers. We have over 50 school-based health centers in Massachusetts that receive funding from the Department of Public Health, and we have a few that receive funding from the federal government. They provide essentially primary care. They're all required to provide behavioral health services. They're sponsored by a variety of agencies, so that in itself makes each kind of service different. They're all required to bill for services, and all school-based health centers are required among their access criteria standards to do an annual behavior health assessment. So in 2007, an earmark to the state legislature that was actually led by some advocates from a school-based health center who happened to reside and practice in the district for the House of Representatives Ways and Means Chair. This is the way science and politics work, is to create an earmark for enhanced services. And this earmark passed and was funded for two stages, one through 2007 and fiscal year 2008, and the second for fiscal year 2009. And it was to enhance service delivery by increasing screening through evidence-based practices, increasing referral rates, and increasing utilization of behavioral health services in school-based health centers. And there was a competitive bidding process, and five school-based health centers were chosen. Four of these were high schools, and one was a K-12 school. All of the schools were urban schools, and they were in five separate districts. The program evaluation component was awarded to the Mass Coalition of School-Based Health Centers, which is the state advocacy organization, and the criteria were to implement the mental health program evaluation template and use a community of practice mode to create quality improvement overall. So the mental health program evaluation tool is one that was developed by the National Assembly on School-Based Healthcare and the Center for Mental Health in Schools. It has eight dimensions of school mental health delivery. It is not exclusively for school-based health center mental health delivery services. This is available on the web at the National Assembly on School-Based Healthcare website. If you go under tools, there are 34 items distributed over these eight dimensions. And this tool was implemented twice in this process, once at the end of the first 3 months and once again a year later. And the convenience of the tool was that the first time it was a handwritten tool and second time around it was web-based. And the schools are asked to select a group of people within that school to complete the evaluation template, ranging from those who work within the school health or school-based health center to those who are active on the school side, such as principals and school nurses and school social workers. And then the group of the five school-based health centers, we use this community of practice model to help them identify what their improvement goals were going to be because of participating in this process. So the process of a community of practice model is one that's adapted from industry. Characteristics are that it brings people together to the table. It's adapted from the idea that the best ideas come from the water cooler. I'm not sure that's applicable in 2008. According to my children, the best ideas come from Facebook. And I find that totally distracting, probably more so than the water cooler was a generation ago. But it's really to include stakeholders and free thinking, get people who have a passion for something engaged in the process, and determine collective activities, so group works as a whole, kind of a consensus about what to do, and also to stress that there's some form of leadership and skill and advocacy involved. So it's not just a free-flowing social group. It's not your book club for quality improvement, but nor is it a task force or a formal committee. It's meant to be structured so there are people who come in and out of this process. Of course, we were funded by the Department of Public Health, so there were some key people that were required to be there. So what was interesting from a policy viewpoint is that the Rosie D. settlement became known as the Children's Behavioral Health Initiative, and at the same time, we were trying to do this little micro project to improve mental health in the schools. And I wanted to highlight the differences. The Children's Behavioral Health Initiative is court-driven, it's top-down driven, it's very rigid at this point. It has mandated screening tools. These, I highlighted the ones that are available for, these are generally used for school-age children, and it provides reimbursement with specific codes for reimbursing, not only for administering the screen, but also for identifying a positive and for the follow-up assessment appointment. And it's specifically to be used by primary care providers. The community of practice, we worked on, okay, what is everybody using for screening and how do people feel about it, and trying to move people from their traditional practice into evidence-based practice. But it's an effort to move folks into it, not necessarily just to mandate it. As the leader of this evaluation project, I didn't have that ability. So we found that most people actually use the PSC, Pediatric Symptom Checklist Youth Report, if they're using a screen, or they use and they use the CRAFT, which is the substance abuse screen. A lot of providers stick with the HEADS mnemonic and the guidelines for adolescent preventive services, which is very long and very detailed. And so there was some strong belief systems going about which is the best way. Also, no one was billing for any of the screening they were doing as a separate, so they weren't getting reimbursed. So the difference here is that for primary care practices like pediatricians' offices, this is somewhat of an onerous process. They're only getting reimbursed $10 for each screening that they do. For the school-based health centers that only get $50,000 per year from the state, this has a potential for being another billable service that they might want to collect on. So how does a community of practice work? We get together as a group. What we tried to do was to meet. It's a very much a stakeholder-involved process, conducted site visits on all the five sites, not only to introduce the project, but to meet with the principals and other powers that be in the school. We developed a troubleshooting method. I would call people, deal with them that way. We did some formal strategic planning on identifying barriers to service delivery and kind of negotiating how do you get around these barriers. And we had expert resources. Around screening, we brought in people from Harvard, from Tufts, and from UMass Medical School, BU School of Public Health. We brought in educators so that the school-based health center folks could learn how to talk. The talk with educators, often we're both on the same overall goal, you know, good outcomes for kids, but we don't know how to talk about it. To educators, it's seat time. attendance, graduation rates, behavioral issues in school. And for us, it's, you know, school-based health centers have moved just from vaccinations to this rather broad approach that even Sarah was talking about that really looks holistically at kids' abilities to deal with their mental health issues and to make some improvements. So we invested in the screening process by actually doing some training on the pediatric symptom checklist, on the brief motivational interviewing based on the CRAFT interview guidance, some adaptation of the trans-theoretical model of behavior change. We brought in people who are experts in what this ROSI D settlement would mean, how to choose your instrument, how to bill for it. There's also a Massachusetts Children's Child Psychiatry Access Project that was funded so that every primary care provider in the state would have access to a child psychiatrist for questions about medication, urgent placement problems, family support, and we brought in a school psychiatrist. The key issues that were identified and worked on for 18 months of this project were stakeholder involvement, school collaboration and cooperation, and quality assessment and improvement. Now, some of the schools chose one or two of these, but these three overlapped over all five sites, and they actually made a very logical framework for us to move ahead and try to make some improvement. The school collaboration turned out to be the big aha. People really felt that unless they had buy-in with the school, they weren't going to get anywhere. And the biggest obstacles that we found were schools that signed on to this grant and wouldn't let any of the primary care people refer to mental health folks without going, taking a loop through the school adjustment counselor and having that be the gatekeeper. The other issues were for folks to bring on their new mental health staff as soon as they could, to change from a concept of referring kids out of school to the sponsoring organization to off-site mental health services to make sure that the services were delivered on site. One of the schools was able to get permission from their agency in the school to open their hours into the evening school. That made it more accessible to school to the children. The stakeholder involvement, some of the issues around that were to bring the parents in to have family input into how the services should be delivered. One of the school systems, Lowell, has a very good program with the Community Mental Health Association with Cambodian youth and the Asian population there that has been very successful, and so they were able to integrate that into the services that they offered. Another issue around stakeholder involvement was to get the teachers involved. See how they flow over? They're not, like, the boundaries aren't real clean. So one of the schools did a teacher appreciation day. Most teachers that work in these urban high schools are very much up against the wall, so to have a day, an event targeted toward them was well received. It also resulted in a lot of more referrals. Another school focused on putting a prevention intervention specialist into the school. So the school sponsor, school-based health center sponsor, paid for a social worker to actually teach health education to all 9th and 10th graders. And that increased the school's kind of, oh, wow, we got a free teacher out of this kind of thing, but also was able to finesse talking in the teacher's room, talking with the coaches, talking to the parents. The quality assessment improvement part proved to be one of the stickiest. If you look just simply at, are we going to adopt the new screening measures, really in order to have people adopt these things as a kind of willing concept and not be forced. The providers in these school-based health centers have a wealth of experience. Many of them have been nurse practitioners anywhere from 10 to 20 years. Some have worked in psychiatry. Some have masters in counseling. Some have different activities in their community. They're not easily changed by mandates. So the concept behind this was to get them to buy into it. That was my concept of stakeholder involvement. The other part was just tracking and making sure that the kids were identified, got into services. So aside from one school-based health center that has a case manager, which if you have the funding is a great way of doing it, is to develop methods in which you know which students are have been shown to be at risk, that you've referred them, and that they get into treatment. The kids that are in the highest risk are the ones who may not be coming to school frequently, may be suspended. For example, at Holyoke High School, you cannot get into the school-based health center without walking through the principal's main suite. and someone say, hey, what are you doing here? So let alone your birth control issues, your mental health issues, or if you were suspended, you wouldn't be able to get in. So we've been successful in identifying a lot of barriers to screening, but this year we're focusing on addressing those barriers. In one school, the pediatric symptom checklist and GAPS, the school department has decided that this is a survey and falls under the Pupil Privacy Act. You want this one? And so it requires active parental consent beyond the school-based health center consent to administer the screening tool. So now the PA there has, every time they want to do this, they have to call the parent and get active consent. And it's just a quirk, but in every single school, if any of you work in school-based health centers or school health, every school has its power, the people who are most powerful, and the schools that we found to be most successful are the schools that were able to identify a school leader who would advocate for them, be it a vice principal. Two cases, they were vice principals who were very strong leaders for improving the mental health access in their school, and that's a key component to success in these programs. Another barrier is that in one school-based health center, the sponsoring agency will not let the school-based health center staff do this screening because they say they're not primary care providers. So that identification, and they will not let them bill. So these kinds of fuzzy borders are ones that kind of get negotiated bit by bit. So what happened a month ago was Massachusetts is in as much trouble as anybody else, and the governor cut this program by 50%. So I'm not sure what's going to happen to all the money that's court-ordered. That's fairly safe, but this demonstration project is now trying to function at 50%. So we're looking into the stars. That's someone looking at an eclipse, because let's hope that this is just a temporary eclipse. And we're also trying to figure out how we can negotiate to have this not just be an enhanced earmark, but become a part of the mental health care for the children. Okay. Yeah, no. That's good. Yeah, does anyone have questions for me while I'm up here? Great, we'll continue. Thank you.